Signs and reader boards sometimes have catchy phrases. I remember one, it was advertising a greasy spoon diner that said, 20 million flies can't be wrong. And I've been in a few like that over the course of my lifetime. 2.2 billion Christians, approximately. And I don't know where Wikipedia came up with that and what all it includes, if it includes us or not. In any event, even if it did, we'd be a very, very minor part of that equation. In 3 days, most of them are going to be celebrating. And the letdown is going to come in January when the American Express, the MasterCard, the Visa bill shows up and they have to pay those, and then they're still in the process of trying to catch up on and patch up relationships that got strained over the, quote, holiday season, sometimes fueled by too much alcohol, and also dealing with family feuds that perhaps are longstanding. Well, this time of the year, it gets dark early and tends to be gloomy because of our short days and, of course, the gray weather here and our abundant rainfall. And I just happened to read Dave's letter just before services, and he dwelled on that very thing. The weather can tend to dampen our spirits, and if we're not on guard, it's easy to find ourselves slipping into a negative frame of mind. You know, we can become apathetic, we can become lethargic, and if we stay inside all the time because of the cold, rainy, and windy weather this past week, that can have an effect on us. You know, people that work outside don't have an option. They have to be out there. But I think we all realize that if you have a positive attitude about any kind of a situation, it can have a tremendous effect on how you deal with conditions like this, the weather being one and other things as well. So when weather conditions around us change, it doesn't necessarily have to affect us adversely when we confront it in a positive manner. Our positive thoughts can help to counteract the effect of the weather on us. Turn to John 10, verse 10. John 10, verse 10. Jesus is talking here. He said, the thief comes not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. So when someone's going to steal, they don't have very good intentions. They're there to harm and destroy. They're not come to do you good. On the other hand, Jesus is presenting the opposite. He has come to give you a chance to have eternal life as well as a good physical life. You know, I don't know who coined the phrase, which you may have heard, but it said, God does not add years to your life, but life to your ears or your years. You know, it isn't our chronological age that defines our life, but it's the quality of the time that we spend during those years that does. Long age, be it 115, does not necessarily equate to someone that dies when they're 45, depending upon what elapsed during that period of time. So the time doesn't mean a lot. Turn to 3 John 1, verse 2. 3 John 1, verse 2. Another scripture relating to this. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. So here we're told that we're destined, if we want, to prosper and to have good health. But it also says that those things will happen in the same way and equated to how your soul prospers. So there's a great deal hinging upon what's going on up here in your mind. You know, both of these verses should be very encouraging to us and help point us in the right direction, in the direction we need to go to have that abundant life, which will be satisfying and fulfilling in every way. So, if the weather gets us down, are there ways to counteract its effects and help us eradicate that often gloomy state of mind that accompanies that? Well, there's some things you can do, you know. Have you ever considered making any changes in your habits to help get you out of a rut? You know, how did you enjoy your ride to church today? Did you even notice it? You know, sometimes we do things in such a just a stagnant manner of doing that, and it becomes so monotonous. It's like you put your car in cruise control and you put your brain in cruise control as well. And 30 minutes later, 60 minutes later, more than that, you drive into the parking lot and you can't remember a single detail of your trip. You know, now you don't need to make significant changes in your driving patterns, but why not leave a few minutes early sometimes? Take a different route to church. Think of it as a reserve way to go should you run into traffic problems, or there's an accident, or there's road construction. What about the Feast of Tabernacles? Have you ever considered a new site? Do you even think about something like that? You probably noticed there was a note that came out about a possible site in Hawaii next year. So, you know, there are things like that that happen and that come up. Now, of course, if there are financial limitations to a new site, especially if, you know, you're on a restricted or limited budget and can't afford to go, that's one thing. However, if that's not the case, maybe we can spend some of these dark days researching new and or different sites and use our time thinking in a positive way about, you know, what it would be like to go, making plans to be able to attend a different location, using your mind constructively. Does our Bible study center around certain areas that we are fond of doing and we like to do, like Proverbs or history or, you know, whatever is your favorite part of the Bible? Those are just random on my part. I could have picked any chapters and, you know, any particular chronological and areas directed to a certain thing, and there's nothing wrong with any of them. It's just that, do you ever entertain the idea there are other areas that you can study? You know, not always just resort to our favorites. I have to catch myself on this also. You know, if I don't find a way to vary it, it's easy to get in the habit of starting at Genesis and ending in Revelation and going through that routine. And there's certainly nothing wrong with doing that. It kind of gives you a template of a method and a way to follow. You know, it's easy to follow something like that. However, we need to consider mixing it up and adding some variety to make our study more interesting, to make it more stimulating. And this pattern of thinking can be directed and utilized in just about every area of our lives. Sometimes in order to, you know, jumpstart our creative thinking, it may be helpful for us to think about our childhood and some of the things we did as children. Turn to Matthew 18. Matthew 18, verse 2. Where Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily, I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. And continuing that same thought in Matthew 19, verse 13, the next chapter, Matthew 19, 13, then were there brought unto him little children, that he should put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, Suffer little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. And of course, we've heard these verses numerous times. If we're told to become childlike, to be converted, to be open, to be spontaneous, to be willing, to have these childlike qualities, as far as our conversion is concerned, doesn't it stand to follow that we can certainly use some of these same characteristics we possessed when we were little children to use and enhance our adult lives? You know, if you think carefully about it, I'm sure you all will be able to remember that some of the most elementary and or simple things you did as children gave you the greatest enjoyment. My brother was 7 years younger than me, so our interests were totally different. And since we lived on a farm 2.5 miles out of town, our options were limited as well. To offset this, I had to create my own activities. One of my favorite that I remember was throwing an old leather football up on the roof of the garage that had a fairly steep pitch, and then trying to catch it when it came back down. You know, the leather ball was very slippery when it was wet, and the shake roofs were also equally as slippery. So when that ball came back down, if it had any water, any dampness on it at all, it was like trying to, catch a pig in a mud, you know, one of these big mud pools they have where that's what you're trying to do. It was very, very slippery. And to make the game interesting, I'd play against myself and see how many consecutive times I could catch the ball. Well, I could do this for hours. And it was very inexpensive and a simple thing to do, but it gave me a great way to exercise, as well as it was very enjoyable. It was fun. The only downside was getting soaked if it was raining, and then I had to hear Mom yelling at me, John, you're going to go, you know, get sick and miss school. So I always had to be aware of that. But often, you know, it was simple things like this that gave you great enjoyment and satisfaction without a lot of expense. If we translate that thinking and approach to the things we do in our adult lives, it can also be as beneficial now. Don Morehouse was a church elder who lived 2 miles from us, and he loved to go hiking and he loved to go camping. And he's no longer alive, but when he was always promoting hikes for the teens and also for the adults. And because we were friends, he could easily twist my arm to go hiking, despite the fact that, you know, swatting mosquitoes and little gnats that are called no-see-ums that tended to come out when you were hot and perspiring wasn't exactly on the top part of my hit parade as far as for something fun to do. However, some of the funniest things that occurred during those hikes are among some of my favorite memories. But no, that doesn't mean I'm going to sign up for an encore performance. And after all, age has got to have some benefits. Anyway, consider making some changes in your habits to help you if you feel that you're in a rut. If you think back to when you were a child, you probably will remember that it was often simple things which gave you the greatest pleasure and the greatest enjoyment. Turn to 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. Where Paul is saying, "For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called." You don't see any joint chiefs of staff, the admirals or generals that serve on that type of thing. You don't see a whole lot of senators or congressmen in the church. And although I don't know what would fall in the category of being noble, because they're certainly, if you look at what all is said about a lot of them, they can't fill that position, that's for sure, or at least earn that distinction. Verse 27, "But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty." Okay, so that's directed toward us. However, if we know we are the weak of the world, that doesn't mean we have to remain there. You know, this time of the year, which can be gloomy, can be a great time to develop new skills or to do new things that challenge us. Years ago, when the Bertuzzis served here, Veronica and Mrs. Bertuzzi took an upholstery class together, and they had a great time getting better acquainted with each other while at the same time redoing our family's different pieces of furniture. So it served a dual purpose. Maybe you can find someone in the congregation to do something together with as well. Veronica also took a carpentry class at Everett Community College, and she loved every minute of it. There are usually many, many different courses that you can. There are a lot of community colleges around. They're fairly close that offer good selections of courses. Many of them have an array of evening classes that are not terribly expensive, and some are designed to expose people to different areas of work so they have an idea of what they might like to study. Now, I realize that after a hard day's work, there are a lot of adults who that's the last thing they want to do, something like that. And I'm just mentioning it as an idea. If it something that fits, fine, but if not, don't worry about it. But you have to think, and you have to get some ideas, and hopefully this will help stimulate you. If you're interested in becoming better educated and more well-rounded, or maybe it'll help you get promoted or get a better job, check out a book from your local library. And in the day of internet, maybe there are not that many people doing that anymore. But you can research on the internet as well. You can pretty well find anything. Study a language, take music lessons, build a barbecue in your backyard, or whatever is something different, something that's going to test your skill, something that'll be interesting for you. And that's the real key. Pick something that will interest you. And maybe that desire to do it or something similar goes back to when you were a child. So if it's something worthwhile, consider pursuing it. You know, these gloomy winter months can be a great time to develop new skills and try different things that challenge us. God may have called us to be weak, or called us because we were the weak of the world, but that doesn't necessarily mean we have to stay. And we should desire to change when we think of what lies ahead. You know, why wouldn't we want to think about how to improve ourselves to help prepare us for what we'll be involved with in the future? We need to be aware of our moods. An interesting thing about the use of the word mood is that I only found it in one translation of the 12 or more that you find when you go to a lexicon. It's used in the CSB, or Christian Standard Bible. Turn to 2 Samuel 13, verse 28. 2 Samuel, verse 28. This is the account where Absalom is planning to kill his brother Amnon for defiling their sister Tamar. In this verse, Absalom's instructing his servants what to do. And I'm just going to read a part of the verse which pertains to where the word mood is used. 1 Samuel 13:28. And this is the CSB version. Watch Amnon until he's in a good mood from the wine. So when he's feeling good, he's in a good mood, then we'll strike. If you go to the King James Version, the ESV, the RSV, the ASV, the NASB, DBY, WEB, and the HNB, and I'm not going to say that, it'll take all day, they basically say and translate this verse in the same way with maybe a couple of minor exceptions. In the King James, and all of the ones I mentioned, it says, "Mark you now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine." The YLT says, "When the heart of Amnon is glad with wine." The NIV, "When Amnon is in high spirits from drinking wine." The NLT, a little more to the point, "Wait until Amnon gets drunk." And the NET, "Look!" exclamation point, "when Amnon is drunk." So we see the latter two translations indicate he's very, very well. It equates to being drunk. I think we all understand the context if we think of the word mood today as to how it would apply to us. When you hear someone say, well, he's in a bad mood or a good mood, we understand what that means. The past week or so, the stock market's been up and down, and statisticians who plot the different averages know they have periodic highs and lows. If you go to financial pages, you'll see how company stock has performed over a period of time. Well, people's moods tend to follow these charts, or they're similar. When the market's up, they're happy. When it's down, they get worried. Just as the stock market can be charted and measured on a graph, this is true of people's moods as well. You know, we don't need to be overly concerned if our mood drops a little. That's normal. Or to be overly elated if it rises, because that too is normal. However, we should be concerned if our mood goes down and stays down. This could be an indication of clinical depression. And sometimes women experience this during menopause due to hormonal imbalance. So it can be associated with the weather. It can be associated with other things as well. But when we're down, because of the weather, it always helps to remember that the sun always comes back. You know, it's not gone forever. Its absence is never permanent. A retired sailor moved to Florida because he felt his spirit weathered when he was living in the north. He said that's why so many neurotics lived in the north. So I guess you know where we stand, according to someone like that. He recalled the time when he was at sea and went for 3 weeks without seeing a break in the clouds. He was talking about how the crew became morose, gloomy, and sick. The way he dealt with it, he kept upbeat and happy because each day he would go out on the deck and think of the sun, what it was like before, and what it would be like when it came back, and that's how he dealt with it. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, something worth considering, but that worked for him. Something related to that is a knowledge we have and need to remember of all the good things that God has done for us in the past. You know, I think we can all say that since we've been called, we've received many physical and spiritual blessings. You know, that represents our sun and our universe in the past. And when we begin to be affected by gloomy weather, we can look ahead to what God has promised to give us and our family, the many blessings. And we need to realize that just as the sun returns, those blessings are going to return as well. Turn to Philippians 4, verse 18, or verse 8. Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, not only lovely on the exterior, but in here as well, what's inside of us. If there be any virtue or if there be any praise, think on these things. You know, that's a pretty tall order. I could have said just the opposite, but for the sake of time, I didn't go through those. You know, it's like when you are in the checkout stand at any grocery store and you look at all of the magazines that are displayed there and all of the negative things, for the most part, that are on the covers of those magazines, that's not the type of thing you want to dwell on or spend a lot of time considering. You know, when we harbor negative thoughts, we're like a defective record that goes around and gets stuck in one place, repeating itself continually. How many of us can't get a good night's sleep because we lie there and say, maybe, and not out loud, but in our mind, my boss, my spouse, my children, my minister, they don't understand me. My spouse lies there snoring, getting a good night's sleep, and here I'm tossing and turning, that louse. When and if that happens, get up and turn the lights on, but not in the bedroom, in the kitchen. Make yourself a peanut butter and banana sandwich, and I personally like that combination, but for some it may not work. If you're going to be awake, let it be from an upset stomach, because maybe it'll distract you enough so you can go back and go to sleep. And a good night's sleep usually is a major help to solving problems. Anyway, during these times, and I'm talking about the times I mentioned at first, the gloomy weather we're experiencing now, the times when you're blue, the times when you're down. Think about the fact the sun's coming back. You know, you can count on that. And think of things that will help buoy you up. The sun's permanent and always returns, even if it may not seem like it sometimes. Clear your mind of negative things that can take a toll on your life. You know, some of these suggestions may seem too simple, but they can produce great results. Take a new way home from church tonight. Don't allow yourself to let gloomy weather get the best of you. You know, I like to think about the beautiful, lush, green foliage we enjoy because of the rain. Your Father wants you to have an interesting, exciting, rich, and rewarding life. So don't let gloomy weather stop you from enjoying it. Try some of these suggestions and expand your horizons. After all, you have absolutely nothing to lose.